From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudet. You're listening to Idaho Matters. Now, before we begin our Friday Reporter Roundtable today, we do want to spend the next few minutes talking about yesterday's decision by the U.S. Supreme Court striking down affirmative action in college admissions. In a 6-3 vote, the majority ruled race cannot be a factor, which means colleges and universities must now find new ways to achieve diverse student bodies. Joining us today to talk more about this decision is Professor Shakira Sanders. She is wrapping up her time at the University of Idaho College of Law, and she has accepted a new position, her title, at Penn State Dickinson Law School. She will be Professor of Law, Associate Dean of Anti-Racism and Critical Pedagogy, and Louis H. Vavakis Distinguished Faculty Scholar. Shakira, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Gemma.
I have to say, that's the longest title I've ever read. But congratulations on the new job.
It is a very long title. Yes, a very long title.
And much congratulations to you. Can we just start with the basics? What is affirmative action, and what was the goal of implementing it in the past?
So affirmative action, as it has come to be known, is a series of measures in the 1970s to improve race and gender diversity in the workplace, contracting programs, you name it. Of course, if you can understand, at that time, we were in the sort of period of time where the court is recognizing the pervasive discrimination that exists around the country. We're in the post-civil rights era. And so affirmative action has been kind of used as a phrase to refer to a number of government programs in particular to improve access. So we see it in college admissions, but we also see it and saw it in the employment context.
And Shakira, you know, people often associate affirmative action with efforts to end discrimination for people of color. However, many scholars and a lot of research shows that the greatest beneficiaries of affirmative action policies actually have been white women. And it's not just college campuses, but it's been all the way to the American workplace. And I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Because when we, you know, more women are educated today, more women are in the workforce, right? They're holding more positions of power. White women in particular.
It's always been interesting to me the way in which attacks on affirmative action have manifested themselves into this phrase reverse discrimination, right? But then we're really only using it in the context of race and not so much in gender. And so when we look at the body of Supreme Court jurisprudence on this subject, we don't see very many cases saying that the way you've gone about hiring women or preferences, right, that women may get has gone too far. The attacks seem to always primarily center around the use of race.
So tell us about the case that was brought before the U.S. Supreme Court wanting affirmative action in college admissions to be overturned.
So it appears you had a nonprofit that brought a lawsuit on behalf of Asian students. And I'm not quite sure if that's Asian American students or Asian nationals, but generally the phrase that's been used is sort of Asian college applicants, particularly at Harvard, the undergraduate school, and at the University of North Carolina. There was a trial on the issue. Afterwards, the case went on appeal and it landed in the Supreme Court. And I haven't had a chance to digest the opinion myself, but it appears as if the court has found, or I should say the basic allegations of the case were that the way in which race was used, it was negatively for Asian applicants, and that as a result, African-American applicants benefited more than they should. So, of course, the framing here, right, is the pinning of those of Asian descent against those of African or African-American descent.
So, as I mentioned, this was a 6-3 decision in favor of overturning affirmative action. And I think it's fair that we should note that 8 of the 9 justices on the U.S. Supreme Court all went to law school at either Harvard or Yale. In fact, Sonia Sotomayor said that she was a product of affirmative action. Justice Clarence Thomas was a product of affirmative action. But in their
mind, he would deny that.
Yes. But in the majority of these six, in their minds, at least from a legal standpoint, it sounds like institutions of higher education should be colorblind. And yet, I think it would be fair to say, how is that possible when society isn't colorblind?
Well, much of this goes to Brown versus Board of Education, of course, right? And this idea that we never achieve the type of educational equality that Brown purported to demand as a matter of the U.S. Constitution and the rights that it protects. And so, of course, that is the framing for many people in this case. Does not appear to be the framing, however, that the court uses. Now, to be clear, the court doesn't really get us to, well, what about the fact that schools with predominantly African-American students are some of the lowest achieving schools? What about the fact that schools in many areas like where I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, they were never forced to integrate, and that there were always disparities in funding between me as an inner city student and others who surrounded me in the suburbs of Southeast Michigan. There seems to be this issue of legacy and how the fact that one's parents or grandparents or relatives attended that institution on your college application, you can get some type of credit for that, right? But what does that mean when so much of the vast majority of our history in this nation was of denying education to African Americans and other people of color, as well as women, right? So the court seems to ignore all of those layers to only deal again with this framing of African American students are getting a benefit they don't deserve at the cost of these Asian applicants.
You have worked in higher education for quite a while now. How, in your opinion, will this impact college admissions?
Well, I don't really have to speculate because several years ago, the state of Michigan, my home state that never desegregated its public schools, voted to amend its state constitution to remove the ability to consider race in college admissions. And what we saw in the wake of that were plummeting admissions for many demographics of students of color, but particular inner city African American students at the University of Michigan, at Michigan State. And of course, many consider the University of Michigan to be the top university, not just in the state, but one of the top public universities in the country. And so we already know what's going to happen. We've sort of seen this before. We've lived this. And especially if you are of African-American descent in this country, this is just there is now a new generation that we have harmed by denying the right to an equal education and denying equal access to education, regardless of not just your color, but your socioeconomic status. And here in the United States, there is that link for African Americans, the history of slavery, and where African Americans are today in terms of their earning potential.
Now, this will impact, and correct me if I'm wrong, all public universities and the majority of private colleges, if these private colleges get any type of federal funding. So these are the universities and colleges that will be impacted by this. An interesting footnote on this, though, was that in his opinion, Justice Roberts stated that federally funded military academies, so we're talking West Point, the Air Force Academy, et cetera, will be exempt. And he states in this footnote that the government did argue and said basically that we have such diversity within our military that we need to make sure that in our military academies, there is also diversity because you have the future military leaders who will be leading these troops and they must be diverse, including race. That was a fascinating footnote to me. What does that say to you, even from a legal standpoint?
Well, it says, well, one, I am well aware that at Virginia Military Institute, which was forced via the Supreme Court to diversify on gender several years ago. Well, not too long ago, we got a series of reports about the pervasive racial discrimination, racial harassment, racial insensitivity, the use of the N-word, right? The recreating of Confederate sort of antebellum ideals and basically the student behavior. And it very well could be that this is a under conversation that the court is having with that branch of government. That is to say, you've got real problems that have been publicly reported. They've had to change their leadership at that institution in particular. I mean, the stories that were coming out of there were pretty horrific, right? And so it very well could be that that was what was on the court's mind, which is that we know there's a race problem in our military schools. And if we don't allow the use of race to as a remedy, then we can have a problem. And there may not be another remedy given the behavior that we that was widely reported. Now, there, what one should understand is that the court has not overturned the use of race at all. In many of its cases surrounding employment, hiring, all types of stuff, the court says you can use race where there's proof of discrimination, right? And so for the military academies, there's definite, at least VMI, there is proof as reported. And I think there was a study that came out that pretty much confirmed. Now, this could put colleges and universities at a disadvantage, especially those colleges and universities that struggle with their culture and climate, where students may feel as if diversity efforts were pretty illusory to begin with. This could quite implicate those schools because you no longer have diversity to hide behind or those offices. And therefore, the only option left for individuals may be to present that evidence of discrimination, which for any institution is not what you want as a PR matter, right? If as the, at a base level, you don't want that as a PR matter. You don't want that in your program in general, I would suspect most institutions. So the push and pull, the tension we're going to see, I think could be, you know, another wave in educational equality. And perhaps having schools be more honest and more accountable about the way they use race could further that. We could actually find out that there are other ways to improve diversity than what had been done before.
Well, as always, I want to thank you so much for taking time to talk with us about this and to, you know, clarify certain things about this decision. And we will see how all of this unfolds in the future. As always, so good to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.